Session number 9431, Reel 1.
Mr. Grunwell, Reel 1. Could you tell me when you were born, please, Mr. Grunwell?
30th of October, 1897.
Could you tell me what your parents' employment was?
My father was a gardener. Gardener.
And your mother?
She looked after the home.
Were there any other children in your family?
Seven.
And were you the eldest?
I was the fifth on the eldest.
What education did you have?
Just three R's. Reading, writing, arithmetic. Yes, in just an ordinary board school.
And how long did the education last for?
Well, the education, I think it was... We probably went to the infant school at five, and then we went to the board school later on. And we was there. We started work, some of us, half-time at 12 years of age. And then if we passed the three halves, we was able to leave at 13, which I did, and started full-time working.
What was your full-time employment?
I worked for a yarn scourer, which was one part of the textile trade, you see.
What does a yarn scourer do?
Scoured raw wool. I'm saying yes. And of course there was different processes then that the wool went through. It went through rollers and was dried, and then it went on to reeling frames and so on.
Can you remember what you got paid for this job?
Well, I imagine that in those days, that if you got 8 to 10 shillings, that would be all. Full-time work.
Did he continue in this employment up until the outbreak of war?
While I was there, one of the men thought it was a dead-end job. And he'd a brother worked for the coal merchant. And he asked his brother if there was an opening for me into the coal merchant's business. Eventually, I got a job there in the office, more or less just making coal notes out, as the men used to take the coals to the factories and the gasworks and that. Now, I wasn't satisfied with that. It seemed, again, a dead-end sort of a job. And from that, I joined the forces in September. I don't know whether it was the back end of September, but it was September.
And that was after the war had been declared?
Yes.
Can you remember when you first started your job at the coal merchants? Or how old you were?
Well, all I can say is this, that it must have been around about 15, because I joined the army when I was 16.
Can we actually turn to the outbreak of war? Can you remember anything about the day that war was declared?
August 4th.
Can you remember what you were doing that day?
Oh, no.
Do you remember what your reaction to the news that war had broken out was?
Didn't think anything of it.
Did you think about perhaps what the war would be like when you actually joined up?
The whole thing was that this battalion was formed quite a lot, joined up, went to the skating rink, reported there, and then we enjoyed ourselves in open air life.
What was the attraction of joining the Bradford Pals for you?
I think it was the thought that the job was I was in wasn't what I wished. It was different from the yarn scouring, but still isolated in a coal merchant's office on your own was rather boring. The change in the army was life opened out a little bit more. More interesting.
Can you remember the actual scene when you volunteered, when you joined up at the recruiting office?
No, the only thing I remember was it was a Bob a Day. I remember the place quite well. It's not there now. It was Mechanics Institute, Brantford.
Were there many people there?
No, not so many. My number was 1042, which was, when you think of it, I think just over 1,000 men formed a battalion. So I was getting in at the back end.
Can you remember the reaction of your family to the news that you'd joined up in the Bradford Pals?
No, just took it for granted that the war was on and other men from the village joined.
What happened to you once you joined the Pals? What were the first things that happened to that?
Well, life went on as usual. We went each day at reported for 9 o'clock and finished at 5 and all right.
Where did you live at that time?
At Bolton, in Bolton Lane, near Peel Park, Bradford.
So you returned home in the evening?
Yes.
Did you have uniforms then?
Not at the start, but eventually we got these blue uniforms supplied by the Citizens' Army.
Did you do what training did you do during the day?
Marching, physical training. That was about all.
And how long did you stay in Bradford doing that sort of training?
I think I'm writing saying it was December when we left Bradford and walked to Skipton.
And that was a proper army camp at Skipton?
Yes. It was one what was particularly made with the war wasn't a recognised army barracks in the sense that it was there before the war.
Can you remember how you were accommodated at Skipton?
Wood nuts. Good wood nuts.
Were there bunk beds in the huts or ordinary beds?
Pardon?
Were there bunk beds in the huts? And
wood beds. Straw mattresses.
How many men were in each hut?
Well, if there was 30, that was all.
What sort of food were you given when you arrived at Skipton?
Oh, quite good. Yes, quite good food. Good, no complaints.
Was there enough of it?
Oh, yes. Yes, it was. It's quite good.
Were you issued with your army kit by that time?
Well, we must have been. I can't just remember that when we was issued, but we must have been issued there, definitely.
What was your own reaction to the lifestyle of the army? You said you joined it for excitement, it would be different, it wasn't dead end. How did you feel about it now you were actually in the army? Did you find the discipline easy to get used to?
Oh, yes, juniors. Yes, getting along with the rest of the chaps, who was all more or less bunched together, and as I say, one enjoyed the open air life.
What training did you do at Skipton?
Well, there we had more room, and then there we did other training of forming column and one thing or another like that, wheeling round as a company. I forget now the details, but that was the sum of it, that formation of companies with perhaps battalions sometime, the four companies together, sometimes otherwise, you see, but more or less marching this way and that way. In fact, one of the officers on the photographs I showed you gave us an order one day, and we was near the canal, and if we'd have taken the order, we should have all gone into the canal. But anyway, he was quite a good chap. He was a solicitor, Colin Sutcliffe, and he...
What exactly happened? Did you just ignore the order?
Well, of course, yes, of course, the poor fella who was going out to skip, we was on our way to Ripon. The divisional general was there, walking along the road, him in front of his platoon, and of course, as each platoon passed, they got to give the signal eyes right or eyes left. He looked round at his men and said, "Eyes right," and it should have been eyes left. Anyway, a good chat, really.
Did you do any other training at Skipton, like rifle shooting or bayonet practice?
I don't remember, no. No, I don't remember, no.
How long did you stay at Skipton for before you moved on to Ripon?
I should say 4 months. 4 or 5 months.
And then you marched to Ripon?
We marched to Ripon.
Was that was that a long march?
Well, whether the army thought it was or not, the journey was broken. We walked from Skipton via Bolton Abbey, I don't know whether you know that way, and up over Blubberhouse Moors, and eventually we stayed at a place just outside Harrogate. I can't just remember. But we stayed overnight there, and then the following day, it was about halfway, I should say, the following day, up we got him, onto Skipton.
Did you find the march exhausting?
No. As a matter of fact, we'd done a march from Skipton, 26 miles up to Grassington and back via Barden, Burnsall, Barden, and over the top to Skipton and back again, 26 miles. So it wasn't too bad. The only thing, when we started on the road, the Ripon Road, The land there, of course, changes. It's fairly flat compared to Skipton. We was interested to see the Ripon Cathedral so that we knew we was getting nearer, but it seemed to elude us all the time. We couldn't. It was not when we got very near that we saw it. But eventually we marched along and everything all right.
And at Ripon, there was a camp there.
Oh, big camp. That was the divisional, where the divisional was. Yes, big camp.
How were you housed there? Was that in barracks as well?
Similar to Skipton. Wood huts, about the same size, evidently probably made by the same army, by the same people.
Were conditions at Ripon Camp any different from Skipton?
No, about the same.
And did you do anything other than the basic training you've already described at Ripon? For example, learning perhaps special skills like machine gunning or signalling or things like that?
Well, certain men was singled out for signalling and machine gunning. The only thing I remember there was we did Wilmer Green, there was butts for. We did our, I forgot it again, rifle practice. Shooting, we started whether it was 100 yards first and then go back 100 yards and so on, but there was a test there. I can't just remember what they call it, but that was a thing. Mm-hmm. In other words, putting through your...
Were you a good shot?
Yes.
Can you remember what you achieved?
Well, you got bulls and magpies, and got the bull, he was a good shot, or a magpie, and so on. I can't tell you just exactly now, I mean, details like that. I was a good shot, definitely.
Do you recall doing things like bayonet practice?
No, I don't remember anything of that.
Well, was there anything like tactical exercises that you went on?
Any what?
Tactical exercises.
No, there was nothing of that.
How long were you at Ripon for?
Well, as far as I know, it was 6 months, no more.
And so that would take you up to what time, roughly speaking?
September.
And what happened to you after that?
We were at a little place called Fond. Salisbury.
In Salisbury?
Yes, outside Salisbury.
And that was an army camp as well?
Yes.
And what were you doing there at Salisbury?
Well, just carrying on the same procedure, really, and getting ready, I suppose, for the overseas.
Did you have any idea where you'd be going?
Yes. We was served with kit suitable for Egypt, with helmets and light material, I suppose. And there we were.
Can you remember anything else apart from the clothing that you were given to take out to Egypt?
No, that was all. No. No.
What did you feel about going out to Egypt rather than going out to France?
Well, I just took it as a matter of course.
Did you make any preparations before you went out to Egypt yourself?
No.
Were you given any leave?
48 hours. Just the company I belonged to.
That was C Company?
C Company. C and D Company was also included in the 48 hours. A and B, let's stay put.
How was it decided that C and D Company should get leave but not the rest of the battalion?
Well, we... I don't know, I can't answer that. We just tossed up. I don't know, no idea. No.
Were you looking forward to going to Egypt?
Not particularly.
Can you tell me about the journey and the preparations you made for that journey, the very immediate preparations you made for the journey?
Oh, I just got on board and away we went, and the boat was supposed to be followed by submarines, wavered one way and that way and that way and that way.
It zigzagged, you mean?
That's right.
Can you remember the name of the boat that you travelled to Egypt on?
Empress of Britain.
And which port did you leave from?
Liverpool.
And what date would that be?
Late on in December.
Did you have any escorts with you when you travelled to Egypt?
Supposed to be two destroyers. So far.
Two destroyers went with you?
They went so far with us, and then as far as I know, it was left to ourselves, and of course, to avoid the tracking of the submarines, we did the zigzag.
Can you remember any reaction to the fear that U-boats would be in the Mediterranean?
We realised that they was about. In fact, as we got into the Mediterranean Sea, evidently we was the target for one. And of course the alert was given, and we all suddenly, as far as I remember, came to the top of the boat. But the trouble was that while we were going up there and during the night, we ran into a French mail packet boat which was cut in two, and the French people on the boat was definitely picked up with us.
They were, they?
Yes, it was one of the interesting events of the journey.
Did the Empress of Britain sail straight to Egypt?
We sailed through the Straits of Gibraltar, called in at Malta. I don't know whether we had to have a repair there, whether it was with this collision with a French boat.
Where had that collision taken place?
Oh, between Gibraltar and Malta. Of course, we shoved in there, and whether we had to be repaired, I don't remember. But we were there for just a while. And then we passed on to Portsend without any incident.
Can you remember what conditions were like on board?
Oh, reasonably good. We was down and we'd hammocks, which was hung from the roof below, and there you spent your night's rest.
Were there any routines that you had to follow while you were on board?
Don't remember any. No.
Can you remember details like the food that you were given? Was that any different to normal army food in any way?
Well, I think it was served with white bread, which I don't know whether it was baked on board or not, but little loaves of white bread, which, as far as I know, is what probably the Navy was served with.
And the ship itself, was that in any way camouflaged for this journey? Was it still in its...
don't think so.
...normal colours?
I can't remember. Of course, the boat was, as far as I know, was... out of war was a steamship. flying between here and America in Canada. Empress of Britain from Liverpool.
How many troops were on board? Roughly speaking.
Well, at a guess, I think our whole brigade, which would be going on for 4,000 men, seemed a lot. But there was our battalion and the 2nd Pals. Yes, I think there must have been the brigade on.
Which port did you arrive at when you reached Egypt?
We called in, first of all, as far as I remember, at Alexandria, but we didn't stay there. We passed on to Port Said, and there we disembarked.
Can you recollect the disembarkation at Port Said?
I can recollect it. It seemed rather a weird place, with one or two Harems knocking about, but otherwise it seemed just deserted somewhere or another.
There was no reception for you as you arrived?
None at all. As a matter of fact, we was only there a short time, whether it was 48 hours, and I was one of those what was glad to be out of it, which we was transferred down the canal about, as far as I remember, about 30 miles to one of these signal stations, kind of a signal station for the canal.
Before we perhaps describe your work on the canal, can you remember what the conditions were like at Port Said, in that camp that you stayed for 48 hours or so?
Oh, it was poor.
In what way?
Well, just like, as far as I remember, it was just like going into cattle sheds and, well, something bigger than, perhaps a big, just a big building with nothing in it, so to speak. Just a shed.
Were there any facilities there, like latrines and so on?
Well, I suppose there must have been, but I don't remember that.
How were you fed at that point?
Well, I suppose it would be biscuits. Just biscuits, iron rations. As a matter of fact, with being the age I was and hungry, if you could get hold of anything in the food line or anything of that, you went in for it. But